Hey everyone, it's Jake. I just wanted to say you're going to love this episode with Vivek Ramaswamy. I just wanted to tell you two things real quick before it starts. Number one is Vivek was very busy. We filmed this at Turning Point, so we only got him for 45 minutes. So the last 15 minutes of this episode is me and my mom talking about the podcast and the episode with Vivek. It's great. You'll love it. I just want to tell you that the camera that was on me, unfortunately, that media drive crashed and I lost it. I don't think anyone cares about not seeing my face. You're all here for my mom. But I work really hard to edit the show and make it enjoyable. It is going to be one straight shot of my mom with a sucker. You can see how bored she is when I talk. She's falling asleep half the time. Not the usual editing style I want to do, but unfortunately, we only had the one camera. Those of you listening on audio won't know what's going on or tell the difference. The other thing I wanted to tell you about real quick is Zippix Toothpicks, which is a sponsor of ours. Those of you that have been with us from the beginning know about them. They're nicotine-infused toothpicks. They're great if you don't want to vape or to help you quit smoking and do it on an airplane, wherever. Just look like a toothpick. But now I'm getting my nicotine fix. What I wanted to tell you is some exciting news that my mother, the Hunter Biden of cigarette smokers, total crackhead, has actually quit smoking. Because of Zippix toothpicks, they actually got her to quit. And those of you that have followed from the beginning know how she chain smokes. So it's a really big deal. I want to get you on these if you're having trouble smoking or if you just like nicotine like Tucker Carlson. Just calms you down, whatever. They're great. They also have ones with vitamin B12 for a little kick in the day, a little extra energy boost. Go to ZippixToothpicks.com and use the promo code Roseanne. You get 10% off your order. So I want to tell you, these things really work. I love them. I got my own little humidor of toothpicks. That's ZippixToothpicks.com, promo code Roseanne. Anyway, enjoy this episode, and we'll see you next week with Jimmy Corsetti. So you see,
my patience is growing. Hi, everybody. Greetings, earthlings and human beings. I'm excited today on the Roseanne Barb podcast to have Vivek Ramaswamy. Swami.
Let's try that again.
It's actually pretty.
That's the right way.
It's better than most. I mean, it's Vivek like cake.
Okay.
Just like think about like cake. Yeah, Vivek.
But I thought it was Vivek.
No, it's just Vivek.
Vivek.
I mean,
okay.
All TV hosts, I don't blame you, like say it about 15 different ways.
Yeah.
Vivek like cake.
Vivek like cake.
Ramaswamy. You got it.
Ramaswamy. I knew that. Now, what in the hell kind of name is Ramaswamy?
Oh, it's a good name. It's a beautiful name.
Where'd you get that from?
it's from my parents, actually. Believe it or not. They came from India. My parents came to this country 40 years ago with no money, but in search of opportunity.
And you were born here.
Yeah, of course. Got to be.
Yes. Oh, yeah, because you're running for. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I
was born in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Now, where did your parents come from in India?
They came from a state called Kerala in southern India, which is a pretty cool state, actually. It's beautiful. My dad was from a super rural part of southern India. Mm-hmm. And so he used to take us back during summers, because back then my dad still had like his parents and their extended family, and my mom's parents were both there. So in the summers, when we were growing up, they would go back, and it's like I couldn't describe to you or to the people I would go to school with what that would be like. Because there's the urban parts of India, that's one thing. But the rural parts are like, you know, you would get sick every time you go. You had to boil the water twice every time and then cool it before you drink it. Uh-huh. There's no toilets. It's all squatting, you know. that's how you go to the bathroom. You want to take a shower, you use the stove to heat it up. And then you mix that up with cold water and take a bucket. But it was a cool experience in that we grew up in solidly middle class circumstances in Ohio. My dad worked at GE. My mom worked in nursing homes as a psychiatrist. But we would go there. And I think part of what my dad wanted us to see was to be grateful, I guess, not take for granted the things that we had. Mm-hmm. And it definitely had that effect, I would say, you know, for our time growing up.
So now, are you Hindu?
Yes, I am.
I love it.
All right. Thank you. Oh. One of the first I've met this week to have that strong of a positive reaction to it.
I
just came from an interview
it.
with a different guy who says, well, how can you be president? So
who was that?
Well, Jack? I forgot his name. He was actually desert, but he was asking in a helpful way because he says that's the question that he gets from a lot of people in his following too. And he's a pastor. He's actually very thoughtful. But yeah, I am Hindu. I left my faith, I would say, through my teenage years and early 20s, like many people do, but I came back to it as an adult with conviction. And I actually would say it's probably my faith that leads me to this journey of running for president. Because the core of my faith is there's one true God. He puts us here for a purpose. And he works through us. And it's our job to realize our purpose. And so if that's what you believe, and this is sort of my purpose to use the God-given skills that I've been given to do good in this country. The other core teaching of my faith is we're still equal.
Yeah, of course.
Even though God works through us in different ways, we're equal because God resides in each of us. And so in many ways, it's my faith that leads me to do what I'm doing in my life. My wife, Apoorva, she's a successful throat surgeon. She's with me. She's in Phoenix today, but she's at 7 a.m. tomorrow in Ohio going to be treating patients, cancer survivors in the operating room. That's what guides her. I did go to Christian school, so I went to St. Xavier in Cincinnati. That's where I grew up. And I will say that even though the faiths are different, we share the same value set in common. I read the Ten Commandments for the first time in ninth grade.
Really?
Yeah, I was in scriptures class. I was 14 years old.
Most Christians haven't even read that. What's that? I say most Christians haven't even read that.
I think it's worth just sometimes even remembering what saying what they are.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's the Old Testament, so Jews, that includes, you know, same Ten Commandments. There's one true God.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't take his name in vain.
Right.
Observe the Sabbath.
Keep it holy.
Yes. To honor your parents. That was a big one for us growing up.
Don't steal.
Don't kill. Don't commit adultery.
Don't covet.
Don't covet. That's a big one.
Yeah, you were saying Hinduism's a lot like Judaism.
Yeah.
Similar values.
People call themselves
Hindu, right?
Jindus.
Yeah, Jindus or Hindus, I've heard. Actually,
Hindus,
Yeah.
They're very similar.
So because there isn't a big conversion component in Judaism or in Hinduism. I think there are a lot of similarities. Are you Jewish?
She's a Jew.
Okay, I thought some people were... Okay, anyway.
She's the most Jewish person
you've ever... You are Jewish?
Yeah.
Practicing?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Are you Orthodox?
I don't even need to practice anymore. I'm so damn good
at it. I like that. Practiced. You already. So are you like Reform or Conservative Orthodox or not really any particular label?
I'm...
definitely not Orthodox.
Well, I'm just the... I keep your shop. I keep
you
Shabbat.
You keep Shabbat. Okay.
I observe all the holidays.
You keep Shabbat, like to the extent you won't even turn on lights?
Well, yeah, mostly for the most part.
For the most part. Yeah, that's all we
can
do.
Yeah, that's
just
her laptop.
Best efforts is what we, you know, But I will say that
it's about more about meditation and, you know, renewal of yourselves.
That's the beauty of the Sabbath, actually, is in some ways, my wife, Borva, and I, so we met at Yale. I was in law school. She was in med school. But we were both part of the Jewish society at Yale called Shabtai. We were just invited to it.
Oh.
The rabbi was there. Ended up becoming friendly with him. He's like, you got to join this. But then every Friday night from sundown to, we would go till midnight, 1 a.m., phones off, the men serve. I mean, it was very traditional. And then he would have the continued full Saturday to sundown off with
electronics. Wait, the men serve?
That's what they did in Shabbat.
Serve the women?
The men would serve the food.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's unusual.
Maybe that was that strand of tradition.
Shabbatai, that sounds like one of those.
Shabbatai was the name of the society. But the point is,
you know, there's so many different kinds of Jews.
Just like Hindus, too, by the way. There's so many different kinds of Hindus, too.
Yeah. No two are ever alike. Like, there's not enough to get a coalition. Trust me. But they've got it all.
Hindus are the same way. I'll tell you that. The thing is about I would say the Hindus in America compared to Jews in America, this is the point I was going to make, is the Jews in America do a really good job of preserving the ancient traditions.
Yeah.
Some
do.
It's important.
Hindus definitely don't. No. I mean, Hindus completely let go. That kind of community doesn't exist in the same way because, one of the things I think you have Christian pastors who will take the scripture and make it come to life, right? We've been to countless churches, including even this year, and even at St. X High School and otherwise. I think you have some rabbis who will do that. Maybe not quite to the level of evangelical Christians.
Right.
And then Hindus are like the opposite end of the spectrum, where if you go to like a Hindu temple, they wouldn't dare have conversations about the kinds of things we might be talking about where we are right now in Phoenix at Amfest or otherwise. Much of it's done in Sanskrit, which is, obviously an ancient language that most people don't know what it means. Right. So it's sort of like Catholics before, you know, Vatican I or whatever the first convention was. But I think that one of the things I appreciate about evangelical Christians and certain segments of certainly the Jewish American community is the ability to keep those traditions alive and make it relevant, to make faith relevant to people in the present. And that's something I think the Hindu American community could hopefully, you know, do a better job of. But it's a relatively recent immigration wave of Hindus to the U.S. over the last 50 years or anyway. So I think there's a lot of time for that in the future. But anyway,
so what happens to Hindus? Are you saying that they assimilate quicker and join, you know, become Christian or Catholic or otherwise?
I think they stay Hindu, but it takes on a more ritualistic quality without necessarily having the kind of pastor figures who will make it applicable to the challenges you face in daily modern life, right? Modern life is, I mean, even if you just open up to a given page of the Old Testament or the New Testament and just try to read it, it's not exactly like eating candy.
No.
You got to work to understand it.
Yeah. And some of that work requires someone who is learned in that.
I see what you mean.
But who lives in the present and helps build those bridges to make that scripture come alive.
Right.
And that doesn't exist in the Hindu
American
community in the U.S. I think it probably does in India. Mm-hmm. But in the version of it that exists in the U.S., so far at least, that's been missing. But I think that's a beautiful thing. And actually, one of the things I took away from our time at, you know, Shabtai, the Jewish society that Apoorva and I became part of at Yale, was bringing an admiration for the people who take an effort to read the ancient scriptures, but to bring that
into
the
present. Yeah, to make them present,
It's like, you know,
because they're always applicable, or they should be.
They are applicable. They're timeless.
Because they're moral stories, right?
They're timeless. But the way they're written, sometimes you may need a rabbi or a priest or a pastor to help you, you know, just, I mean, maybe some people, I'm one of the people, if I opened up and read that myself, whether it's a Hindu scripture or whether even it's the Old or New Testament, at times, if you're just reading it raw, you got to really put in the effort versus if you have somebody who has, and sometimes the historical context, you don't
I love hearing people talk on it.
Yeah.
You know, interpret it. And
if they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Right. It's always so interesting to me that these very old written things can be so relevant.
Where do you live,
still,
if you don't mind me asking?
I live in Texas and Hawaii and Los Angeles.
Okay.
But I'm traveling all over the place now.
Where in Hawaii?
I live on the Big Island of Hawaii.
So you probably have I've been there. From my time there, one of the things I remember is the view of the stars in the sky at night.
Yes,
you
know, it's different.
It's like no place I've been like Hawaii, at least are the places I've been.
They don't have light.
So let me ask you this.
But I was going to say, just to finish the religious discussion of the analogy, you know, the rabbi used to use is many of the stars you're seeing, maybe even most of them, don't exist.
Right. They don't.
At the time
dead.
You're seeing them.
Right.
But you still see the light.
Right.
And that's, I think, the way we think about those stories of scripture is you see the light in the present, mm-hmm. even though the person whose light shines or who that star was named for is long gone. And that's the way I think about the job of people to pass on tradition in this country, not just religious tradition, but you could say the same of our Declaration of Independence or our Constitution as well. And I don't think we're doing a good enough job of that today either.
Absolutely not
at all.
Not at all. It's non-existent.
So I want to ask you this one big old question.
Okay.
You don't really want this job, do you?
I don't covet the job.
Yeah.
Do you, to borrow our earlier discussion?
No, but you don't really want to be president of the United States, do you?
I expect to be president of the United States.
You're serious.
Oh, yeah.
You want to, though?
From a personal want perspective, there are parts of it that seem worse than a sharp poke in the eye. But do I believe it's my duty to do this? And do I believe we can lead a national revival? And do I believe that's my purpose here? That I believe that it is my moral duty to realize that purpose? Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, I like that you talk about Trump. You know, I love Trump.
Yeah, I like him too.
I know you do. And you're so nice to him. You're not stabbing him in the back or anything.
Like everybody else does.
Yeah.
Well, see, the funny thing is everybody else, like, these people have been licking his boot for money and endorsement for years. Mm-hmm. I haven't been. I've been building businesses, right? This world of politics is new terrain to me. But I respect him for what he did for this country, because I know, like me, he didn't have to do what he's doing either.
Right.
And he kept us out of war.
Yeah, he did.
And he grew the economy.
Yeah.
And I give him a lot of credit for that. I'm doing this for a reason, though, because what I see, so I'm 38. I'm the youngest person ever to run for U.S. Mm-hmm. president as a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this. I think the next generation, my generation and people younger than me, they are lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Totally
about
lost.
That.
I mean, just directionless totally. For purpose mm-hmm. and meaning. And I think I'm going to be able to provide them that sense of direction and purpose and meaning and identity even better than Donald Trump or anybody else in this race, because it takes somebody with fresh legs from the next generation to reach the next generation. I mean, that's the hard truth. There's a reason why Thomas Jefferson was only 33 when he wrote the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
These revolutions, these revivals, they tend to be led by the next generation. And so I respect the hell out of Trump for what he did for this country. But the America First agenda doesn't belong to him. And it doesn't belong to me. And it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the people of this country.
Yeah, that's right.
And I believe whether it's going to be 2024 or 2028, the America First agenda outlives Donald Trump. Hopefully it outlives all of us. I don't think we're working with that much time, though. I think right now, if my kids, I'm a father of two sons. If my older son is in high school before we get this right, I don't think we have a country left.
I agree.
I really don't think we're working with that kind of time. And so I couldn't be some idle bystander. I mean, like you, I'm sure, as I'm sure I expect is true of you, we live a blessed life.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents would never imagine the life that we live when they came to this country 40 years ago, or even when we were growing up, as my dad was facing layoffs at GE, to imagine that we're living the blessed life that we have right now. I founded multi-billion dollar companies. My wife is a throat surgeon caring for cancer survivors. She doesn't do it for the money. She does it for saving people's lives. That's the American dream, but
yeah, it is.
I don't think our kids are going to have access to that unless we step up and actually save it.
Is that why
and
you
I do think I can do it?
Is that why you want to run? Like,
yeah.
Explain how you went from creating businesses to getting into politics.
Yeah, I mean, my wake up call was probably even before I went into politics, but probably my eye opening moment was in 2020. So I was about 6 years, close to 7 years to being the CEO of this biotech company that I founded. I was leading it as CEO. I oversaw the development of a number of medicines. Five of them are FDA approved today. One of them is a life-saving therapy in kids, which is the one I'm most proud of. Anyway, I was leading that company as CEO. Finally, it's a multi-billion dollar company. You've got, you know, 1,000 employees, whatever. I've come up for air. Before that, it was, you know, 100-hour work weeks for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our first son, Karthik. He's born in February of that year. And I think there's something about being a dad that, for me, just did change my perspective
did
about
for me
what's
too.
Important.
Yeah.
How are your kids? If you don't
She's
mind
two and a half.
That's, oh, that's her right there.
That's her
oh,
right there. Yeah. And we have another one on the way. But yeah.
Oh, good for you guys.
My first. So
good for you.
It did change.
And having
me.
Two is a blessing that I didn't imagine when our second was born. My first one was born in February of 2020. And I don't know if you guys remember that, but that he was actually born in New York City when my wife was finishing her training as an airway surgeon.
COVID.
Yeah. That was the first wave. This is before people knew what the hell this was.
Right.
And so she's an airway surgeon. And she's like, all right, I believe that I've been given gifts. And they had a big doctor shortage in New York for the very first wave.
Right.
I mean, say what you will about the COVID policy craziness. That first wave, it was like, oh,
yeah,
there's something going
people
on
were
here
getting
in New
sick.
York City. The hospitals were overrun. And so she actually made a pretty brave decision. She said, 3 weeks in, nobody knows anything about the virus. She's going in to do open airway surgery for serious patients who had COVID. And so we had to separate for those weeks because especially for a newborn, 3 weeks old, nobody knows what this is. So I took care of him for about a month and a half while she was taking care of patients doing airway surgery on the front lines. She, you know, she got it. She got over it, et cetera. Her dad got it too. He was a surgeon. He ended up in the ICU for better part of a couple weeks. And so that ended up being a pretty tumultuous period. But I had a chance to, actually, I was traveling all over the country and the world and to take that time to be grounded with him.
So you were the CEO of a biotech company and raising a newborn?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so I actually first actually took a like a couple months, not like a full hiatus, but elevated other people at the company. Mm-hmm. And then that provided me some space. I was reflecting. It makes you think about the why. So anyway, you fast forward a couple months, and then in May of that year, George Floyd dies. And there are these BLM, Black Lives Matter protests across this country. Mm-hmm. And then the most bizarre thing happens.
Did you think that was a psyop?
I think it was a disaster, whatever it was. It was a disaster across this country. But the weirdest thing that happens, suddenly there's a demand, just like every other tech and biotech company CEO is doing, that I make a statement on behalf of Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I refused to do it. I said, no, I don't, A, I don't agree with their values. B, that's not the job of a company.
Right.
And so lo and behold, that generates a series of controversies. Mm-hmm. Following January, by the next January, multiple advisors to my company's advisory board had resigned.
Wow.
Oh my God.
And so I had to make a choice. Mm-hmm. Am I going to bend the knee to this new stakeholder capitalism cult?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or am I going to speak my mind freely? And I decided, so that was, anyway, you brought me what led me to this journey from being a businessman. That's the first time I said, you know what? I'm going to speak my mind freely as a citizen.
Yep.
I stepped down from my job as a biotech company CEO to speak my mind freely. I wrote a book called Woke Inc. Mm-hmm. At the time I wrote it, the publisher's main concern is nobody would know what the word woke was. Hmm. So they're not going to buy your book. But it ended up being, you know.
No, they know.
And it was, well, I think my book actually helped elevate that. And I'm proud of that. I wrote a series of books afterwards. I still don't think I was going to run for president.
Do you think that woke stuff is just Stalinism?
Yeah, it's modern Stalinism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, let's go a layer deeper.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I think the woke stuff actually, so for a while, and I'm every bit as opposed to it as I was, but it can prove to be a bit of a distraction at times.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. what happens is you get, like take the Wall Street version of this. So I got my first job in the fall of 2007 at a hedge fund right before the 2008 financial crisis. Remember the 2008 financial crisis and the bailouts. Well, what happened was there was this woke left and then there was the Occupy Wall Street left.
Mm-hmm.
The Occupy Wall Street left said, we want to take money from those wealthy bankers and give it to poor people to help poor people. Wall Street didn't like that very much. So what they said is, hey, we'll do the thing that the woke left wants us to do. Diversity and inclusion. Put some token minorities on your boards. Muse about the racially disparate impact of climate change after you fly in a private jet to Davos.
Yeah,
that's pretty good work if you can get it, but it proves to be a distraction. It's what I call woke smoke to deflect accountability for the bailouts.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Hello.
I mean, hello, right? And so the same thing you see in the military.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think they were
100%
and totally pointless for this country.
So they were good for private contractors.
They were excellent for private contractors.
And
good
opium.
For people who made money on that.
If you like heroin and opium, it was good too.
It's good for people who have private vested interests.
How about vested interest
in Ukraine?
Socializing the risk and privatizing the profits?
That's exactly, I mean, that was the 2008 bailouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exactly it. So my point is in the military, the same thing. So the left used to hit the right for the bailouts because Bush did the bailouts. But then they said, don't worry, we're going to say the stuff you, the left, want us to say, woke smoke. So the same thing happens after the Iraq War. The left used to be the anti-war party,
right.
The Democrat Party. But then if you're General Mark Milley, you know who that is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you're General Mark Milley, you'd rather say, hey, don't hit me for that. I'll just talk about systemic racism and white rage.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's a deflection. It's woke smoke.
And it works.
It works. In Silicon Valley, right? The old version of break up big tech. Used to come from the left.
Right.
But then they say, no, don't worry about it, guys. We'll censor hate speech and misinformation as you define it.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, leave our monopoly power intact.
Exactly.
And it works. Wow. So that's what I've realized is
it all just serves the corporate state.
Totally. Totally. The permanent state. So it's not, so the wokeism is Stalinism, et cetera. And I agree with all of that. And it's a poisonous philosophy, but its real relevance to us in America today is it's a deflection tool where the permanent bureaucracy, the permanent state, the actual shadow government, both within and outside the government. I mean, the swamp doesn't just live in D.C. It lives in all parts of the country. It's a way for them to deflect criticism from the left in what you call an arranged marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's a good arranged. My parents had an arranged marriage. That's a good kind. I don't mean that. This is less of an arranged marriage of love. It is more like mutual prostitution.
Do you trust anything that's being parroted out of the mouth of so-called experts on the TV?
No, when I hear trust the experts, I know they're lying.
After the last 3 years, I just don't trust anybody.
Me either.
That's why I'm very excited to introduce you guys to The Wellness Company, and specifically their medical emergency kit. It has 8 potentially life-saving medications so you can feel safer. It comes with meds like,
Amoxicillin is one.
Amoxicillin, you read those, Jake.
Ivermectin.
Oh, yeah, that's the big one. Z-Pak.
The horse paste, Z-Pak. Mm-hmm. And it also has a 22-page guidebook, which is basically like having a doctor on call.
Yeah.
You don't have to go on WebMD and see that you have cancer.
I got to get one of those for everybody for Christmas.
Yeah, that would be a great, and a satellite phone.
Good Christmas present.
That would.
That's what I'm doing. So write me down and get me that.
Money. I will. And your liberal children.
Oh, hell, I'll even give them one.
They love ivermectin. They're huge fans.
Now they're huge fans after Joe Rogan came out with it.
No, that was when it was horse paste. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, twc.health/RB. Use promo code RB for 10% off.
Mm-hmm. And the net result of that is the birth of this woke industrial complex, mm-hmm. right? This hybrid monster of state power and corporate power that together accomplish
fascism.
Fascism. You got it. Mussolini's definition of fascism. Right. That's exactly what it was. And I think that's the real threat today. It's not just big government, what it was in 1980.
Yeah, it's communism and fascism.
That's right.
Both.
And corporatism.
It isn't that they melded.
That's exactly what this is. That's exactly what this is. Modern corporatist fascism.
It's a hybrid.
Exactly right. And I think we need leaders who understand that. Somebody who you can't just recite slogans you memorized in 1980. It's like Dorothy might have said to Toto in The Wizard of Oz, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not in 1980 anymore.
Right.
And so anyway, that comes back to why I think and I expect to be the next president.
Well, let me put you on the spot here. Yeah. Let's see how smart you are.
Probably not enough to know the answer to whatever you're going to ask me.
You know, I ran for president in 2012. Did you know that?
You ran in 2012?
Uh-huh.
I did not.
I didn't win.
So you had the experience.
You didn't.
Yeah. I had the experience of fighting my ass off to get on 3 state ballots. Which
awesome.
I got 60,000 votes on 3 state ballots, and my vote count was under $1 per vote.
Amazing.
It is.
Wait, you spent less than that?
Uh-huh.
She did it all on Skype.
Yeah.
Amazing. Zoom. It was with the
Imagine
Green
what you'd have done with modern social media. You might have actually just won the damn thing.
I could have, but I saw Trump take a lot of my ideas, which are just populist ideas that I think all smart people would come to.
Yeah, the people
just as a matter of fact, right?
Yeah.
So what's the first thing you do? Say you did get put in there. Okay, what would you do day one?
Cut 75% of the federal bureaucracy.
Love it.
Mass firing. Mm-hmm. Not a chisel, bring the chainsaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about super drain the super swamp.
Ultra drain. I'm actually people don't like it when
you
I
like
say it
that guy in Argentina.
I like him a lot. I liked him like even when he first started running. We're gonna get that done here. I mean, it's that model here. And then, you know, I'm a libertarian and a nationalist combined.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I think about as my philosophy. And so the administrative agencies are the hybrid that hybrid of state and corporate power. A lot of that's mediated through the administrative state. Shut that down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then as commander in chief, use our own military. Here's a radical idea. Crazy idea. Instead of using our own military to protect somebody else's border halfway around the world or send supplies so some Ukrainian kleptocrat can buy a bigger house, instead of that, how about we use our own military to protect our own border?
Hey, there's an idea.
Yeah. And I can do that on day one as commander in chief.
Yeah,
that makes it hard though for exactly Israel, right. though, right?
What's that?
Not to put you on the spot, but I agree with you about Ukraine. But Israel, just personally speaking,
well, actually, I can tell you about my view on this.
Okay, well,
yeah, I don't mind.
Just answer it.
I really, I'm not a.
You're not afraid. I know.
I'm not a tiptoe.
I like that about you.
I mean, I'd rather speak my mind and lose an election than to win by playing snakes and ladders. But here's what I would say. I think I have a more deeply pro-American view and pro-Israel view than anybody else in this race, but it's different.
Yeah.
It's different than the traditional view. So here's my view. You know who David Ben-Gurion is?
Of course.
Okay. He's the founder of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He's the George Washington figure of Israel.
Yeah.
So
same hairdo.
Yeah.
Ben Gurion, George Washington.
Yeah. These guys are like the OGs, right?
Yeah.
So Dave Ben Gurion's about 5 feet tall, but he's a mighty man. Mm-hmm. Okay. His view was that Israel has a right to exist.
Mm-hmm. Shocking.
If the hundreds of millions of Abraham's sons by way of Ishmael get 22 countries or whatever, the sons of Abraham by way of Isaac get one.
Right.
And we don't need to ask the West, including mm-hmm. America, for permission right. or for forgiveness.
Right.
We're going to defend ourselves and need the ability to do it. That was the premise of Israel.
That's mm-hmm. right.
So my view is, look at what's happening now. Right? Mm-hmm. You got Biden maybe dangling a small check over here, but then believing that that has a say in terms of what Israel does or doesn't do to defend itself. I view it differently. We should not intervene. That's not only better for the United States, it's also better for Israel. They're able to get the job done they need to get done. The IDF can go in and out and get Hamas taken out or whatever they need to do. I mean, certainly the leadership thereof or whatever they need to do. That's Israel's decision to make. That's not our decision to make.
Right.
But if we muddy the waters and we're involved, A, we're then accountable for what they do.
Right.
Which creates risk for the United States, but also which requires the United States to then ask questions to second guess what Israel does. So I don't think Israel wants an armchair quarterback.
But the United States,
they like the funding.
What's that?
They like the funding.
Yeah, but I think that that's what's better bullshit. For them if they had to choose between the two.
That is such bullshit. The United States is a bad boyfriend.
Absolutely.
It is funding both sides of that war.
That's also true.
And it's disgusting.
Should not be doing any of that. It's disgusting. All that Palestinian against that.
They give more to
Iran.
They do. And get rid of that too.
Yeah.
Get rid of, what the heck? We're $34 trillion in the hole. Why are we, what are we doing giving this Palestinian aid?
Yeah.
We've been doing it for a long time.
Don't you think Obama's the president, not Biden?
I'll tell you, it's a machine that's the president.
Yeah.
Biden is a puppet.
Yeah.
I mean, people think his cognitive defects and they're using it against him. His cognitive defects are not a bug. They are a feature. I mean, that's the truth because he makes him a puppet for the people pulling his strings, right? Mm-hmm. So he's a little puppet. And you know what's funny right now is now his popularity is tanking a little bit. Now you're hearing about the Biden documents case mm-hmm. and the Hunter Biden stuff. Yeah. Why now after all these years? It's because they're going to move him out of the way and pull out their next little puppet who they trot out in about March. That's when it's going to
happen. That's what everybody says. Who do you think it's going to be?
I don't think they can do that.
I've been saying that for a long time. I don't know. Other people are saying that. I've been saying it's going to be March for a long time because that's when Trump's trials are going to be well underway. So they're going to pop that out.
Who do you think?
Newsom?
Yeah.
Because he wants it.
He wants it so bad. Yeah, he does want it.
Yeah, usually the person who wants it most badly in that kind of scenario is the one that gets it. The only exception might be that
they're going to have a tough time selling him what with the way California looks and what he did to it.
Oh, but the one assumption you're making there is that truth matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And distilled by the media, certainly the mainstream media, people outside of California are going to think that this was the promised land, the land of milk and honey is what they're going to sell once Newsom's the nominee. And so...
Oh, he's just all about crony.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I need some hand sanitizer if we're going to be in touching distance of Gavin Newsom on a debate stage. But I'll tell you that a lot of oil that probably rubs off of that. But you know that's just the reality. He's just another puppet. He's just another puppet. It almost, and this is where I think
who do you think's at the top of the puppet show?
It's a machine. That's okay. The thing. Okay. See, I used to think is it Susan Rice or is it Barack Obama or mm-hmm. the Clintons. It's deeper than that.
You think it's what, DARPA?
It's the machine. It is a horizontal, faceless managerial class. It is what Thomas Hobbes called the Leviathan. That's what this is.
And so that's why we need to go in there with
a jackhammer and break the machine.
I can buy that because American that's bureaucracy? Exactly what it seems.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
An American nightmare. That's what it is.
It's a machine here, or is it a because this is global?
Transnational.
It has to be, right?
It's transnational. See, the three-letter agencies here, I'm going to shut them down.
Good.
You know, FBI, ATF, CDC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Department of Education. We got a whole list. Food and Nutrition Services. What the hell are they doing in the Department of Ag?
Making everyone fat.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We've got a whole list we're going to shut down. But it's transnational. UN.
Yeah.
WHO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arguably, potentially, NATO, right? You go straight down the list. So the managerial class, what we call the swamp, is transnational. Yeah, we are.
So it's like we just need to defund all of this.
Yes, we do. Stop
like
using.
We've created our own enemy.
We have. We pay for our own enemy. It's a form of self-loathing. We pay for the global climate cult that shackles the United States.
Yeah.
That bites the hand that feeds it, the United States, while leaving China untouched.
And they're the big poisoner.
Oh, China's laughing at every step of the way.
Number one polluter.
You, of course. China burned more coal last year than they ever have. The U.S. burned less coal than we ever have. The very people who are opposed to fossil fuels in the United States are also the ones who are opposed to nuclear energy.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because nuclear energy might be too good.
Right.
At solving the problem, the alleged problem, but it has nothing to do with the climate. It has to do with letting China catch up to the U.S., what they call global equity. And guess which country has the most advanced nuclear reactor? It's China. So I could go on all day on this, but here's the reality.
That's why I didn't like Obama and why I ran against him, because his biggest donors were nuclear tech.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
He took more money from nuke folk.
Oh, interesting.
Then, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, he's a nuke car salesman.
Did you say that in your line?
He's a used nuke salesman.
But he was also a guy who pushed this climate agenda that Al Gore kind of set into motion.
Yeah.
I'll say one thing here is, part of this is, it goes back to the first discussion we were having. It's unrelated, we think, but the discussion about faith and tradition.
Yeah.
People are lost. And when you're lost for purpose and meaning, you're going to bend the knee to something.
Mm-hmm.
So climate has been become a substitute for God.
Yeah, really. In a way.
It's become a new temple of worship.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you believe that you're doing this with a religious instinct, then they can convince you to do anything. I mean, Greta Thunberg is like a modern Joan of Arc, right? I mean, it's child abuse of a mentally deranged teenager.
Yeah, I have to be careful what I say about her because it's mean.
Okay, well, I will just say that it's the modern Joan of Arc type of figure. That,
well, Joan of Arc was a great
warrior, right?
Well, that's true, minus that.
She actually won a war.
No, I'm saying that the people have made us out. The people have conceptualized her as a modern Joan of Arc figure. But it's because why? We have a substitute. We need to believe in something. We have a human innate need to believe in something bigger than ourselves. So if you don't believe in the real thing, God or country or family, you're going to believe in something else.
Well, then you just believe in outrage, it seems.
Yeah.
Everyone's really turned on to outrage, her going, how dare you? All that. Just the outrage of stupidity, I guess.
That's right.
Stupidity just outraged at itself. And it doesn't want to get any better or learn anything.
No, it doesn't. That's accurate.
I think China's paying her It's like woke smoke.
Woke smoke. Blow woke smoke.
It's like, let's go get everyone mad at the U.S. and then we'll just continue to,
That's exactly what the whole
What would you
there's
do?
A, there's a Chinese word for this, by the way.
What?
You familiar? You know this word? It's called a baitzuol.
Baitzuol?
Yeah. I mean, since you brought this up, I can't pass the.
Yeah, let's go for it.
So it's literally exactly what you said. So baitzuol is a Chinese word that refers to progressive white people.
In
their language, it's like the equivalent of useful idiot.
That's
the connotation it has. So it's like a derisive term referred to progressive white people as kind of the useful idiots.
I'm taking it.
There's a Chinese word for this. Unbelievable.
Baitzuol. Right? We're going to make this happen here.
Baitzuol.
Is that
Baizuo.
Do you think that's how they regard us? They must.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly the point. I mean, the useful idiots, right? They're gonna shackle themselves over there, some climate cult. Great. We'll lap them over here.
Yeah.
Hey, those businesses want to talk about systemic racism in the U.S.? Yes, if I'm Xi Jinping, yes. Stop slaughtering black Americans. And I'm not making that up. That's literally what Xi Jinping has said when he's pressed on the Uyghur human rights crisis. The U.S. BLM proves the U.S. is no better. His top diplomat, Yang Jiechi, literally used those words at the Alaska summit, that the U.S. needs to stop slaughtering black Americans.
Yeah.
And that what else did he say? China wants to see the U.S. do better on human rights. That was something he said.
Amazing.
Too. Unbelievable. With a straight face.
Wow.
So Baitzuo is absolutely a real concept, but they're using it to effectively laugh at us and marshal our own insecurities against ourselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Brilliant. And it's that mirroring stuff they do.
Yeah.
Like, what about how the Democrats, I mean, I know you're not, I'm not for any party at all.
I'm for America.
Me too. Yeah. But
the party, I mean, Republican Party is pretty corrupt.
T- They're terrible. Both.
Let's just be pretty honest about
both
that.
Both just crap.
I mean, Ronna McDaniel. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I your life may be better if you didn't, but she's this.
She's a Romney.
Yeah. 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 That's true. Who Mitt Romney has said the only candidates he would sooner vote for a Democrat than to vote for either me or Trump is what right. Mitt Romney said. Her uncle, Ronna, has said that I'm the only candidate who won't get a cent of funding from the RNC. Why? Because I criticized her record of failure. I mean, that almost proves my point. It's not her money.
Right.
Right.
She acts like it is. It's like the equivalent of a squatter in a rent controlled apartment that think they own the place. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the way we're seeing a lot of this dirty world of Republican partisan politics. I care about the country.
Yeah. None of them do they? None of them care about the country at all, nor the people in it.
Very few of them do. Some of them, some people are, I've met some good people who are, you know, even a couple in Congress and some who will be state legislators. I mean, some people I think are earnestly in this for good reasons, and that's been eye-opening for me. But it's a small minority.
I think more and more, because you said slowly. You're feeling it.
I'm feeling. Oh, in terms of the people on the ground, absolutely. Mm-hmm. In terms of the people who go into politics, I'm encouraging more of us to do it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah. And
regular people who can put two and two together.
Yeah.
And can't be absolutely. Bought. You think you can be bought?
Nope. My biggest donor is me.
That's cool.
By far. We put tens of millions of dollars of our hard-earned money into this campaign. I didn't inherit it. It's hard-earned. Self-made. But what is the point of having money if you're going to bring someone circus money?
To bring jobs back here, what are you going to do about that?
It's pretty simple. Cut the regulatory state. You know, 75% reduction I was talking about? That's where most of those regulations are coming from. Drill. Frack. Burn coal, embrace nuclear energy, stop paying people more money to stay at home instead of to go to work. This isn't complicated. I think we need a CEO in the White House who can do it.
Now, here's something that might piss you off. What if Trump asked you to be his vice? What would you do?
Well, actually, I'm not making this up, Roseanne. This last week, I was in Iowa. Multiple people, and we get a lot of people come into our events. Mm-hmm. They're curious. They're Vivek curious, but they'll even come in with Trump hats. We had a couple that left this week, and one actually even raised his hand and asked from the audience. He said, I came in here thinking I wanted you to be Trump's VP, but I'm leaving here thinking I want Trump to be your VP. and they're coming at it from like a place of love for him. I think that would be easier for him too. It'd be a good job for him because then you know, he's in his 80s. He doesn't have to put himself through that hell again. It almost comes from a place of love for them, for him, but also of this country. And so I'd work with him in some way.
Yeah. You would?
I'd work with him in some way. If he was my VP or my advisor, I would take him as a mentor and advisor. Absolutely.
But not his VP if he got the nomination.
I'm not a plan B guy. I mean, I didn't get to where I am in life, and you didn't get to probably where you are in life. But at least for me, the way my brain works, it's almost like I have a brain defect. Yeah. I can't see a plan B.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a plan A guy. And I think actually.
You're doing really well.
My gut instinct is I have no polling data or math. I think I'm going to win Iowa.
Do you?
Actually. Yeah, I think so. Which sounds crazy because right now I'm polling at fourth.
Yeah.
In most of the polls. But I think Iowa is grassroots driven. A lot of the people supporting us are first time ever caucus goers and they're not polled. A lot of them are young. So if they show up, I think they're going to show up. I think if they show up, I think we're going to deliver a shock in Iowa. But regardless, I'm in this for the country, right? It's not about me. It's not about – it goes back to what you said. Don't covet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't covet this office, right? I mean, to tell you the truth, some people might want to be president to ride on Air Force One. I mean, just some real talk, you know, probably similar for you. I mean, it's not that much of an upgrade from what I've been doing.
Right.
I'm not in this for the trappings of being the U.S. president, right? It's actually a lot easier and more comfortable for me if we don't. But I'm doing this because I don't think we have a lot of time left as a country. If the interest payments on our national debt become the largest line item in our federal budget, which is about the next 5 years, we don't have a country left.
Yeah.
Your daughter, my two sons, they will not have the same country to grow up in. And I don't believe somebody else is going to be able to do that for the next generation and reach them and revive who we are in the way that I hope to for this country. I truly believe that.
I know we got to wrap up pretty soon.
Yeah, they're dragging me out.
But we got you for five more, I think, right? what do you say to your biggest detractors? Because we know the negatives on your Anomaly is a good friend of ours. I know you were on his show.
Yeah. What's his actual name?
AJ.
AJ.
But Dreamer. But there's talk that you've been funded by Soros and the WEF. Can you just air that out right now? In the last five minutes?
At first, I was like, you know, I think skepticism is good, but
yeah.
At this point, it's like people. Well,
they don't trust, Republicans don't trust anybody.
Yeah, but just make your own judgments on the facts, please. Right.
Well, they can't.
I mean, the mainstream media will force feed you stuff, but Twitter will force feed you. So
just do it here. You'll never be asked again.
I don't mind for me, but it's just, Jesus Christ, people, we got a country to save.
And,
the George Soros bullshit. So
factioning is.
So I have zero tie in my life with George Soros. When I was 24, I got a scholarship from a generalized generic scholarship that thousands of kids apply for.
Right.
Generic. And I only found out about it on a Friday. I submit on a Monday, on the Sunday night before a Monday deadline. I end up winning it. $50,000. You take it. Funded by some other guy, a dead guy who's dead now, called Paul Soros, who's a relative of George Soros, who any student can win that scholarship. I tell your kids and my kids the same thing. Somebody's going to give you that money and you want to pay for
take
school.
It.
Go for it. You take it and you run.
Understood.
Now, there's strings attached. No, don't you bend. I told you, I stepped down from my job as a CEO because nobody's going to put a muzzle on me and stop me from speaking. World Economic Forum, I have zero affiliation. I've been their biggest critic. Now, they like to name young billionaires and whatever on their list of people who win an award. They did that for me. I refused their award. I said, take my name off your damn list. They refused to do it.
Oh, they gave you an award? I don't know any of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I sued them.
Okay. Did you win?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. Sued their ass and we won. And so that's kind of how I roll. Excuse the crass language. But
no, we love it. It's the Roseanne Barr podcast.
These people. These are not people who share our ideals. Mm-hmm. But if for people at home to just sort of make sure that you're wisened up. I mean, Ron DeSantis had a fundraiser this past summer with a George Soros investment partner for his presidential run. Heck, Donald Trump took a $160 million loan from George Soros. And I don't hold that against Trump. He's a businessman. He presumably had his reason to do it. Does that mean he's controlled opposition? No.
No.
But they used to say the same stuff about Trump with Hillary Clinton or otherwise.
Right. Who is they that's
my
doing
biggest
this?
Donor is me. What's that?
Who is they that's doing this?
I don't know. It's like seems like a lot of people online that'll pop up and say something. But my view, some of them are
it's
earnest.
It's the bot farmers.
It's the bot farmers are a big part of it. Some are earnest people. Because you have a government that has lied to us for a long time. So people should be skeptical of anybody who's new. But at a certain point, people, you got the facts in front of you. Yeah. We don't have time to waste on this friendly fire BS.
Gotcha.
We got a country to save, put the best people up to do it. I'm not doing this. I mean, the things I'm saying about January 6th, okay?
Yeah, it's great.
Being potentially, and it looks increasingly like it,
100%.
A clear case of increasing clear case of entrapment, how our money's being spent in Ukraine, the climate change agenda is a hoax. The things that I'm able
what
to say.
What are we doing in the Ukraine? Any idea?
We're allowing a Ukrainian kleptocrat to buy a bigger house, using our taxpayer money to do it so we can cut Social Security and Medicare here. But there's a reason I'm the only person in this race who's able to say certain of those things. Even Rana resigning. I'm the only person in this race who can say certain things.
Yeah.
Not any other candidate, not a single one, has been able to say certain of those things. And the reason is I'm not bought and paid for as some pawn on a chessboard. This country's allowed us to live the American dream. I'm 38 years old, started multi-billion dollar companies. I'm not doing that to be somebody's pawn or circus monkey. And I think that's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
Somebody with fresh legs who can't be paid for. That's what it's going to take to save this country, and that's why I'm in this. And so I could go with you guys all day.
I just wanted to take a second to tell you and remind you again that we are now affiliated with Gold Co. You can go to rblikesgold.com. That is my mother's landing page with them, and fill out the IRA kit form. That's what they specialize in. If you have a retirement account, you got your money in savings or stocks, and you have this big plan, you cannot rely on it. Things are too volatile. I suggest highly that you look into transferring your retirement into gold and silver, at least a portion of it, because we don't know what's going to happen with the stock market. I mean, Biden's shitting his pants, literally, an election's coming. China's here. I mean, you know how insane things are. So go in there, fill out the form. If you have a retirement account, they'll walk you through it. You got to do it. You can change it years later if you're not comfortable or things get better. But right now, put as much of your money safely in gold and silver as you can. You can also just buy gold and silver on this website. You don't have to do the IRA kit. that's what they specialize in. That's what they, you know, that's the product that they're best known for, but you don't have to do it. Just fill it out. When you talk to someone, say, I just want to buy gold and silver bars. They'll talk you through that as well. So go to rblikesgold.com and protect your wealth. Thank you.
Hopefully this is the first of several times we're going
to
do this.
We would love to have you back.
It's just a warm up.
Yeah, yeah. I'd really like to talk real deep politics with you next
time.
Let's
go deep. Yeah, I feel like we're just getting to know each other this time.
Yeah, but it was a pleasure to have
that's
you
good.
Here. So
that's good. Well,
so nice of you.
I will
to
say
come.
This is one thing in closing, because I did feel like we were a little dour there, and I don't want to end on a dour note.
Yeah, let's end on a positive.
Well,
yeah.
Truthful isn't dour.
Truthful
always.
Isn't dour. See, thank you, Roseanne. Thank you, because I'm not going to be the guy who says it's morning in America, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be. Yeah. And I think it's going to take somebody whose best days in life are still yet ahead. And I don't take that for granted, by the way. I hope they are. But somebody whose best days in life are still ahead to see a country whose best days, I truly believe, can still be ahead. That we're not at the end of some ancient Roman Empire. That at least we don't have to be.
We don't have to be. Absolutely.
So we'll tell the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it has to stay in the same place it is today. So anyway, that's where I'm at.
Will you pardon Assange and J6 prisoners?
Yes. Assange, Douglas Mackey, hell Owen yeah. Schroyer, any peaceful J6 protester, Donald Trump.
Great.
All of them get a pardon on day one.
Love that.
And it's a growing list that we have. One standard of the rule of law in this country. I'm not going to do it in the last day. Many presidents wait till the last day.
Day one,
January 20th, 2025.
Get rid of the DOJ too.
FBI we're getting rid of. And DOJ were completely replacing and turning over.
Okay, good.
Love it.
Thank you.
Right,
thank you.
Have a failed speech. Bureau of Investigation, as I like to call it.
Oh, love it.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
What did you want to ask Vivek? Because this is going to go at the tail end of the Vivek interview. Because we usually do an hour. He had to run, so we have to kill like 15 minutes. Did you like him? I love that he said he was going to pardon Assange and get rid of the FBI. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that. That's stuff I wish Trump would say.
Mm-hmm.
But He didn't like the WEF and Soros stuff being brought up, and I feel bad for him because he did make a good point. They've all taken funding from different places. Why is he the only one that's being kind of held to account? But I think the real problem with Vivek is he's so well-spoken and he's charismatic. Like when he was sitting here, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm voting for Vivek. And then he left. The cloud's gone. I'm like, I don't know what I think about him. He has that presence.
Well, the way
I
thought about him is that I was going to say this to him, but we didn't. You kept interrupting me, but I wanted to say, I think he's been very useful to Trump because he does stick up for Trump. And, you know, he goes, well, you guys are liars to the press. You've lied about Trump and you.
It's true.
You know, it's cool that he has Trump's back like that.
Well, I do believe that he does want to tell the truth. That's what I do like him. Like I said, the things I don't like about him is that I like him, which is really not his fault. I don't like that he's charismatic. Mm. I don't like that he's intelligent, because then I'm like, okay, I don't trust him. He's a fucking reptile or he's Satan, you know?
No, I think he's got a part to play and he's playing it well.
But I think he likes Trump because he's sincere. Like when he was talking about Gen 6 and all that stuff, like entrapment was sincere. Did you see that clip? With the woman just trying to interrupt him for three straight minutes. It was like talking to you. Mm-hmm. She kept interrupting him for three straight minutes. And he was so good. He was like, you know, I know this is not a narrative you want to hear. Like, I know this is threatening to you. Like, he was being graceful. But I think he's sincere in that shit. I don't think it's political. I think he actually, the reason he's nice to Trump is because he's not deranged. Like, everyone likes Trump that's not out of their fucking mind. We all like Trump.
Well, you know.
You think Trump's, because I know you have conspiratorial thinking. You
no,
think
Trump's unbeatable.
So do you think Trump's behind Vivek, like Vivek?
Mm-hmm.
So you think Vivek is part of the Trump campaign? This is fascinating. Can we?
Just like I think so's DeSantis.
How does Trump use Vivek and DeSantis?
Well, DeSantis plays the heel for Trump.
Right.
And then Vivek is the Trump negotiator.
But do you think Trump's funding their campaigns, or they're part of it, or like how deep does this?
They
conspiracy?
Got mutual.
Is this? Are you being serious?
Yeah, the mutual funding there, because Vivek's thing is to show people like you don't really want libertarians, and you don't really want far right DeSantos.
Right.
You want Trump. That's what's being shown.
All right.
You want the middle Trump. He's the middle.
Well, he's going to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And he just told us he's confident. He thinks he's actually going to win Iowa. And he's like pulling at 4%.
He could, because they got a lot of libtards over there in Iowa.
Well, he thinks it's the young Republicans that are going to come out and vote for him. Hold on, baby. You're going to be there.
No, it's the libtards that are sick of the Dems that'll come out for him.
But you're going to be in Iowa campaigning for Trump. You're going to talk to the caucus members. So what are you going to do if a
Vivek? So it's weird that I'll be campaigning against Vivek.
Mm-hmm. Vivek, like cake.
Vivek, like cake.
Yeah.
I do like cake.
I know. You're probably going to vote for him just because his name sounds like cake.
I probably do.
But what if he does, like, what if he, maybe, I don't think he can win Iowa, but what if he has a stronger than predicted polling? That could be, like, what if Vivek could actually win the election?
He should reconsider being the vice, and Trump should have him be the vice. He should be the vice under Trump in case, God forbid, then he would have paid his dues. But he hadn't paid any dues to come up against Trump. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's an upstart, and, you know, he better not go too far with that because people are sick of that shit.
But Obama did the same thing when he ran. Remember, he was the upstart. It was Hillary's nomination. No one thought mm-hmm. Trump coming, and he whipped her ass.
He didn't. They stole that one, too.
Oh, I don't think so.
They stole that one away from Hillary. I was so pissed at the time because I wanted Hillary at that time.
Yeah.
And they did steal it from her and give it to him, and I was one of them that was going to fight to the death for Hillary against him because I knew they had gave it to a young man over a woman who deserved it.
But he was a much better politician. He had a much better grassroots campaign. He was also African-American, or at least half African. I don't even know what his thing is. She's a white woman, Clinton. Her husband was in the White House. Like, he was the new, fresh outsider. The same shit Trump ran on.
It was what was happening in corporatocracy all the time. Women were training young males that would get their jobs. And it was that. It was sex bullshit. Hillary deserved it at that time, not him. He had paid no dues.
I think I'll disagree with you. I think it's probably the only election that was legitimate.
Mm-mm.
Was that election? Yeah. Mm-mm. Do you remember?
Not in the primary when they stole.
No, because I actually saw Obama speak at the DNC for I think it was for John Kerry, and he was the star of that. I was talking about him the next day. I said that guy's going to be president, and everyone thought I was crazy. He was that popular. He really was.
I have to say that I liked him in spite of myself or himself or however you say it. Till I found out all his money was coming from nukes.
Well, and he ended
and
up
then
being
then I went, God, he's really oily.
That's
to
what
do
I'm saying.
That.
No, he ended up being a horrible, horrible president, a horrible, horrible person. That's what I'm saying. Vivek, in fact, Vivek got in trouble. I wanted to ask him, it wasn't enough time, but he was plagiarizing it a couple times Obama's speech. AJ called him out on it. Almost word for word. Like, I'm the guy with the brown guy with the funny name. What am I doing here? That's how Obama started when he started. So
yeah,
and he's just like Obama. He's charismatic. He's
he has the same movements. He's studied in his movements. But I was looking at the head, you know, because yeah. I go by the head shapes.
What did you get? What
not
reading?
The skin color or the other racial characteristics.
So you read Vivek's head?
Yeah.
And?
Well, he's got one of those heads that comes from. He's got the kind of head that. It's. Very full at the top and not well-rounded in the middle.
And what does that mean?
He needs more time to adjust himself.
So he's not ready to be president?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Would you support a 2028 Vivek, knowing what you know now?
I have to hear him talk because I don't like what he said about the U.S. and Israel either.
Oh, I think he said the same thing you and I said, that Israel should stop taking help from America and just go fucking wipe out Hamas.
That isn't what he said.
Yeah, it was.
He said America shouldn't give aid.
Yeah, well, no, he's saying Israel should literally be able to destroy the Gaza and kill all of Hamas and do what they have to do. America, Biden's telling them to stop because they're taking our aid. So he was saying if they were outside of aid, they could go do what they have to do.
Well, that I agree with.
That's what he
actually
said.
But I don't like America trying to tell another country what they can do to defend themselves.
That's what he was
saying. How arrogant is that? Oh, is that what he was saying?
Yeah, but he was also, that's what he's like, Israel probably doesn't like that. And I said, well, they like the funding. And then you got mad. But I'm.
Mm-hmm.
We do pay for Israel's military, a large portion of it, right?
That's not correct. We give them aid and then force them to buy our weapons.
So if Israel,
it's a roundabout deal, like everything the Democrats do.
Yeah,
it's a you know, they used to call that the reach around.
Yeah,
when two guys are jacking each other off. You know,
you hear that, Livia? well, I think if Israel's able to support its own military, then they should cut ties with America and then go fucking turn the Middle East to glass.
I just don't think America should be telling other nations how they can defend themselves.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah, so he's right about that.
All right, well, you did good. So if you want to wrap up.
Trump 2020,
40, 40. Trump 2020, 40? You must be tired. Trump 2024, you're trying to say? Mm-hmm. Look at this interview when you cut to Mom. Look at her. She's like, oh, the sucker. All right, well, we got to wrap this up. You have no energy left. Well, Vivek, good luck to you in Iowa, and we'll see you after. Do you want to say anything else? Wrap up?
I'm going to be kicking your ass in Iowa, Vivek.